Monday.
Another wonderful Monday.
Batman. Wait a second. Let Batman start observation and not complaint. He had difficulty being able to dial and feature on FreedomSoft.
Uh-huh.
It seemed like every time we pull up the number, it wouldn't do anything. And finally, after one of my salespeople spent about 6 hours, and he finally told me to fix it. And I went on my MacBook Pro and fooled with it a while and found out when the number comes up, you have to touch the upper number and that little down arrow. And once the down arrow comes down and shows the number you're dialing out on, then you can hit the button to dial out. And that's not...
Where did you get stuck at? Which part of that step? Did I lose you? I can't hear you guys if you're talking. Okay. So where was the confusion that you have to select a number?
Well, we only have one number.
Uh-huh.
So we're thinking it should have defaulted to that number, but it's like when you click the call out and it comes up, it's like our number will show up for like a half a second and then it goes away. And then you have to click on the little down arrow to bring up our number and click on it, and then you can dial out.
Right.
But the salesman and Larry, they were just trying to hit the green phone icon to dial out, and it wasn't going out.
Gotcha.
And so Larry had called your office and put in a call for tech support.
Middle
of the day, noon, 1 o'clock, something like that, and nobody's called back.
Which day? Today?
Today.
Okay. You guys in coaching, you have to go to, and I know I told you this, I don't remember which day last week, go right to the coaching center. Don't mess with support.
Just email?
Don't mess with support. Yep. Go right to the coaching email. Don't bypass, don't go through any of that. Then your ticket's one of a bunch for the day. And whereas I keep an eye on the coaching email, and if something's in there, I just reply to it. It's so much faster. So,
yeah,
don't mess with that.
Yeah, you are fast on the email. Okay.
There isn't a default number because, I mean, you're at one at this point, but most people that have numbers have multiple. And so, well, here's the thing. If you're calling from a campaign and that number's tied to it, it'll default to it. But if you don't have your number tied to a campaign, you can still select it. Yeah, that would have.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Go to the coaching center.
When I set up the number, I mean, I just purchased the number. I didn't assign it to any campaign.
Right. That's why you have to select it. If it was assigned to that campaign, then that it would assume that that's the number you want to use. Since it's not, it doesn't make the assumption.
Okay.
So, yep. Yeah, no more wasting time with the support center. Sometimes they're quick, sometimes they're not as quick. Coaching email. That's the only lifeline you need for all questions. So.
Okay.
Yep. What else is happening, you guys?
Yeah.
I said you saw my reply earlier this morning. We just gotta make offers. So I know you have a phone person on the phone, salesperson. I know you have leads. Where are we at with how many people are you getting a hold of? Are they going through the script? And here's the other thing, too, is I don't know what phone number your salesperson, I think you're going to have them use the FreedomSoft number, which if that's going to be their number, just assign it to their leads campaign so that here's why you want to assign it. Because as your acquisitions person is making outbound calls, they're not going to connect with everybody, but that number is going to show up on caller ID and people are going to respond. If that number is not assigned to a campaign, those responses are going to go into seller leads instead of back into their specific campaign. So you want to tie the number to the campaign. So you just say, this is Batman's number, tied to Batman's campaign, outbound, inbound, it all gets stored in one spot. So you're going to have multiple numbers.
I don't have a campaign set up for our salesmen.
Okay, so
we have a campaign that
would be the cleanest way.
A campaign for all our salesmen in that one campaign. We've got that. We just got to sign it. One of the glitches we had this morning, while I put a stop today, my salesperson, when he couldn't get it to work to dial through FreedomSoft, he did not want to use his own personal phone. He said he just didn't want his number out there and somebody hacking in and getting his, you know, banking information, everything else, because he does everything on his phone. And
yeah,
you don't want
them using their phone. And you have no way to track how many calls are being made, and you can't record.
Well, same thing. I'm not going to use my phone anymore. I'm going strictly through there. So today was frustrating, but it also forced me to read a lot of the tutorials. So there's a positive end of the day anyway.
Okay. Yeah, that happens with technology, right? But moving forward, let's not have any more frustrating days. Go to the coaching center. Here's the thing, you guys. If you were to look at Rob's account, Rob has 25 phone numbers. I mean, every salesperson has a phone number. Different campaigns have them. And you think, well, yeah, but he owns the company and he gets them for free. No, he doesn't. The Memphis operation pays for them. So we just brought on a new sales gal today. Grab her a phone number so that she's calling on that so we can track it. Because that way, that's going to be Erica's number. Erica calls from this. So people are going to call back to that. That number is tied to Erica's campaign so that she can make so all those inbound incoming calls get tracked properly. So it's still the cleanest way to do it.
Well,
one number per campaign. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm not sure I can't figure this out. Why would a salesperson need their own campaign? What would be in there?
The leads that they're calling. So if you give them access to all of your leads, and you do that with all salespeople, then every acquisition person on your team can see every lead, and that's not what we want. That's not what I want. I only want that salesperson seeing the leads that I've given them. So you could have an acquisitions person on the north side of town and one on the south. You could split it up. You could have an acquisitions person in one market, another acquisitions person market A, another acquisitions person in market B, split up those leads. So the way I do it is, let's say we have two bird dogs running in the same city. All right, so we have bird dog A and bird dog B. I set up a campaign for each bird dog. So now I know how many leads each bird dog has brought in, so I can track that. So let's say bird dog A sent in 100 leads and bird dog B sent in 50. So we have 150 total leads. And let's say that I've got two different salespeople. So I would now set up a campaign for salesperson Chris and salesperson Erica. And when those campaigns are created, there would be zero leads in there. They only have permission to see their campaigns. Now I can take my 150 leads and say Chris needs 15 of them, Erica needs 20 of them. And I can take them from the source into their campaign and keep them separated. Because I don't want every salesperson seeing every lead that we generate.
And
okay.
What are the mechanics to get it from the bird dog campaign to the sales guy's campaign?
Select the leads you want. Let's say you just grab the first page. So there are 20. So you click the little boxes on the left-hand side or click select the page. And then in the gray toolbar, there's a campaign button, and when you click on it, all of your created campaigns will drop down. So you would click the salesperson's campaign and click apply. And what that does is now there are only 20 leads, right? Now they're viewable from two different places is what that does. So if you go into that lead and make a change in either campaign, it'll automatically reflect in the other one. So it's not like there are two copies of it. you can just look at the same set of leads through two different campaigns, if that makes sense.
And it's still just one, a single lead record.
Correct. You can just view it from two different places and control the permissions on who can see it.
Two more phone numbers.
So a question for that is, like, it comes in from that bird dog, and it'll still always show up in his campaign no matter what? It won't ever change that?
I don't ever move it from the original campaign that it came in on, because that way I can see, you know, unless you delete it, hey, you know, Bird Dog A brought in 350 leads, and here's the campaign.
But by changing that campaign, it won't change. It just changes where it's viewed from, or where it's, I guess, where the next step of it is. It's going to be in the sales guy's campaign campaign.
Correct. And that's how you can control who can see what.
Okay.
Because that's part
of
it. You may have a salesperson that you open up full access to, but you may not. Most
and
sales
on VAs,
people, yeah.
As far as VAs go, you do the same thing with the VA then. I hadn't been doing that. I've been giving VA.
Here's all you need to do with a VA. A VA just needs to see the source campaign leads. Actually, they can view them in either. They could view them in the VA's campaign, the bird dog, or the salesperson. They just need to see them so they can do research. So to do that, invite the VA into your FreedomSoft account.
Yeah.
And then let's say you have a bird dog that brought in 350 leads and you want them all skip traced. So you click into that campaign for the bird dog. Over on the right side in black bold font, it says campaign permissions. Click that. There's a little drop down. Select your VA. And that's it. And now when your VA logs in, they can see that campaign. They can go through and run all the skip trace.
Yeah.
What other questions do you have on that? So we're as clear as we can be. So Larry and Janie, good question, because you weren't the only ones that had it. Does that make sense?
You know, Batman's here. Yeah, totally.
Okay, all
right. I refuse to be Robin, though.
sounds like somebody needs to be Joker.
Yeah. I don't do Robin. Don't go that route.
That's funny. What else, you guys? Sounds like it was mainly technical today, so which is – that happens. Let's get through it. And so I would, Larry, if you're going to be on the phone and your acquisitions person are on the phone, get another number. Either you keep the one you have, tie it to a campaign that you're working out of, or give them that one and you grab another one. That way you're going to know you can track the replies. Right? So you want multiple numbers, and you want those numbers tied to your different campaigns. So Rob does. He does a number for every campaign. So, for instance, if he's going to send out a direct mail piece, he grabs a new number, he puts it on the postcard, and he ties that number to the campaign. Why? So that when that direct mail lands and people call or text that phone number, he knows exactly how many leads that campaign generated for tracking purposes. Then when you go to a salesperson, you want your salesperson to have a phone number, and then we go into all of ours and we turn on – call recording, and it's automatically going to track them. So now, like, I can look, we had our sales meeting today. We do it Mondays at 10 a.m. with our team, and we've got a guy on the team, and he'll make like 70 calls, and then he's got like 130 calls, and then 60 the next day, and then he'll go 3 days at zero, and then 50, and then 70, and then right there are like these spikes with this, and then this zero activity in between. So one of the things we were talking about today is, hey, let's get on here consistent. We're not taking days off. We were just having that conversation. But when you have those numbers in there, you can track and see all that, which is really powerful.
Yeah.
And then we go right in. I can go right into his to his call recordings, and I can see, right, if it's 10 seconds, he left a voicemail. If it's 15 minutes, he was talking to somebody. And either way, I can just click into it, and I can hear the whole thing, and then we can do training on it. So super valuable. Anyway, that's how we're doing it. And then it's all just right there. Any other questions, you guys?
I think we're good.
Okay. If anything else comes up, let me know. Who else? Mike Drace, I know you were on. Batman went on first, so go ahead.
So as far as keeping track of the KPIs, you know, in FreedomSoft, and I'd asked this in my response in the coaching center, but is there any system in FreedomSoft to generate a report?
Not yet. It's
based
one of the things.
That's where I was struggling, trying to keep track of my sales guys making the calls. And
wait, what are you trying to track? Tell me which KPIs you're after.
So trying to figure out how many people he's actually called, how many people he's actually contacted, and then what response. The ones that he's been told to push to offer, those I'm moving into a group.
Okay.
And that's kind of how I'm keeping track of that. Most of them I'm keeping track of by just putting them in another group so I can isolate them.
So a couple things. Yes, it does track that. You just have to use a FreedomSoft phone number, go to the Reports tab, click on Reports, and you'll see all of the outbound calls being made or inbound, right? No, you can't answer at this point. So you'll see all the calls being made. If you turn on call recording and you look through that, you'll have a pretty good idea. Like I was saying, if it's 15 seconds long, it's probably a voicemail. If it's 2 minutes, somebody probably answered but was busy or whatever, you can listen to it. If it's, 10 to 45 minutes, then they got into the script. So you can see, hey, here's a connection out of X number of calls. So that, yes, you can track right now through the phone system.
I'm still trying to work through my phone system thing. So that's why I've been trying to go through the leads and I've, modified my screen so that I can see certain things, but, it's just not effective trying to go back through and see what my sales guys put in there, So that's where I was, not being able to put the number in for contacts.
Are you calling through FreedomSoft? Because you had another phone system in place.
Not yet. I'm still...
By next week I want to have it
in place. Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing there is manual, and I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it in FreedomSoft because he's going to have to save it to a lead record. You want a scoreboard, like a Google Doc.
Yeah.
If in the meantime that says number of calls made, number of people talked to, number of offers, something like that. That's how I would do it. Rob he's been talking about tracking this stuff. Well, the phone is already there with the reports tab.
Yeah.
But I think he's still going to bring in, something that'll track number of contracts generated, some of the other KPIs, which would I'm just drawing a blank off the top of my head. But
exactly. That all
changes when you use FreedomSoft phone numbers. You instantly have it. So if you're using something outside, you've got to have – that's my recommendation is a Google Doc that you both have access to. They can update on a daily basis, and you can just log in and see it.
Yeah, so that's one of my things to submit for requests for, if they've got the data on the dashboard, there should be a way for one of the tech guys to just basically run a report off of that data. It's all in fields anyway, so if you can just dump it into a spreadsheet, then I can go in and sort the spreadsheet and figure it out. But right now, I'll just deal with what I can. But so that was just something with taking a lot of time to go through and try to update that, and I don't want to put information that I don't trust, so that's why that number called people contacted was only 13 when I know it's a lot higher than that, but I don't want to put something in there I'm not comfortable with. So anyway, so I did have another conversation with my sales guy today. Got him, he's learning, I'm learning, so it's kind of one of those things where we're working together through this. He's more than understanding, and he's obviously new to it as well. So he's working with me through the process. But
where is he getting hung up?
I keep reiterating, we got to get the people on the phone and we got to get them to offer. And he, for a little bit there, was trying to set up appointments with the people he was talking to go look at the houses. This was, last week. And I says, no, we don't waste our energy trying to go and see something that we may not even be in the ballpark. Don't even worry about it.
Yep.
We need to be able to make them a verbal offer. We get close, they accept it, then we start putting energy towards research. And he's, he was okay and he was understanding, but it was, just kind of hanging him up a little bit because he's a touchy-feely guy and he wanted to, that comfort level of making an offer without seeing something. He's high D and high I. He's higher I than high than D, but he was like a 99 on an I, and he was like an 89 on a D. So he's high.
Okay.
So he's got the drive, but he's in a new world too. So he's, I think, swimming a little bit, in dry water. So go ahead.
If you guys need a delay in there,
then
just set up, we're going to call you back in an hour. You're going to be available in 60, an hour or 30 minutes, however quick you guys can powwow. And I know this is, you're full time at this, so it should be quicker than that, but let us run a couple quick numbers and we'll get right back to you. And then you can go through that process with, here's what they have to be able to do through the script and through the conversation, hit comparable sales on the left side of the screen in FreedomSoft, and be able to still remain on the phone and pick out a couple that makes sense and see if you can figure out what ARV looks like. And then they can save that attachment, go back to the main screen, then click rehab estimator on the left-hand side.
Mm-hmm.
They can run through that really quick. Again, it takes some training, but I can get a rehab estimate in less than 45 seconds now. Because I've done it, and so that somebody can pick that up quick because you don't have to know anything about construction to do it. They're basically, you're not going to be doing additions in new construction, so they're just going to put in the number of square feet, the bedrooms, the bathrooms, make semi-intelligent decisions based on what the seller's telling them on the condition of the roof, condition of the house. It's most likely going to be total beater or livable needs work, one of the two, right? They can kick that out really fast. And from there, I would have them running a couple different numbers. I wouldn't necessarily have them go to, although you could, they could go to the buy and hold estimator. But I would, I'd just like to run the numbers on my phone and just say, here's what we think it rents for. Here's what the ARV is. Now, I know we talk a lot about ARV. Is it ARV or rents? Which one? And I'll tell you why it matters. And I know we've talked about this before, but this came up today. So one of my guys was on the phone, and he's talking to an investor seller, and he goes, we have a ton of deals for sale. Let me send them all over. So about 10 of them were turnkey rentals that were tenant occupied, and about 20 of them are tax liens. I think they bought the tax lien and then took back ownership of the property is what it looks like. The owner didn't square up the taxes. And so they own a handful of them. And so I start looking through the numbers, and we've got $800 a month rents, which, a 12-cap buyer, I think it was 8.25, if I remember. A 12-cap buyer could pay $55,000 for the place. Well, the comps in Zillow are a 30. So, right, we've got to be aware of this. Can you go out, So, hey, Mike, I've got this killer deal, 12-cap property. Interested? Yeah. You know, that's right up my alley. Okay. Here's the address. First place people go, jump on Zillow. You know, I'm going to tell you, you know, you're going to ask what's the price. Selling it for 50 grand. Fantastic. I like those numbers. Bam, bam, bam. Right? You call me back 10 minutes later. Hey, man, I just jumped on Zillow. Says the thing's worth 30. Now we got a problem, right? Potentially. And this is where we've been talking through. You've got to know your buyers. Do they only care about rate of return? Some do. Are they also going to look at what the asset is worth? Most will do that. Some will just say, hey, I don't care what it's worth, right? Values are all over the board. I'm going to buy the return and hold this thing for the next 15, 20 years. So this is where you have to know your buyers. Is that going to be an issue or not? It's going to be a yes or no, right? I mean, would you, Mike, personally, Mike, I've got a deal. It's a 12 cap, turnkey occupied. We're going to buy it. I'll fix it up. I'll put a tenant in it. I'll sell it to you. It'll pay you 12%. Interested? Probably. Hey, Mike, by the way, I'm going to sell it to you at 50. Zillow says it's worth 30. Do we have a problem?
Yeah, you know, I would probably question that for sure. I mean, I'm going to feel like I'm not getting as good a deal as I could get.
Even if the return is strong. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. So,
I mean, if I know there's 20 grand sitting there, I'm going to be thinking, well, then I probably should only be paying 10 for that, not 20.
Right. It throws up. I'm telling you, that's why we have to know. So I was training my sales guy, Chris, on this earlier today because he ran some numbers on this, and he's like, he goes, Mike, out of these 20, these six look good. Take a look at them. And I sit down and write. This is where we have to teach our team what to look for a little bit, right? So I looked at him for a couple minutes. I called him back, and I was like, Chris, let's talk this through. Watch this. Here's a property. They're selling it for X amount. We think it needs this much work, just on an estimate. And at this rent, a 12-cap buyer, which that's a solid return, right? You can sell 12-cap deals and pay 50 for it. What's the problem? What does Zillow say it's worth? 30, right? Hey, I've got this car. It's worth 15 grand, but I'm going to sell it to you for 30. And that's it, right? A car's not an income-producing asset. But you get the idea. It changes the perception.
As an investor, I think they're going to be more conscientious about their value anyway.
Right, and they're probably going to Zillow to find it. So here's what you have to know. Here's what you got to know. And here's what we did. I was like, okay, let's see if we can find comps to justify a higher price on any of these because Zillow isn't always right. Right? We know that. One of two things can happen. One is we do find comps, and then as we're selling the deal, we say, hey, here's the deal, Mike. I've got a property for you, selling it for 50 grand. Rents at $825 a month. That's like a whatever, 12, 13 cap. And here's the thing. I'm putting a value. I think value is right around, you know, $50,000 for this thing. But if you jump on Zillow and type in the address, it's going to say 30. I don't put a whole lot of stock in Zillow. I don't know where you sit on that, but let me do this. What's your email address? I'll send you over the comps I found that justify, you know, that'll show you why I'm coming up with a value of 50 instead of 30. Now that's a little bit easier. That's more palatable, right? Okay. So I just headed off the potential roadblock in the conversation and say, listen, you go throw this thing into Zillow. Here's what you're going to find, but I'm going to send you some comps over. So on a couple today, I looked online and I think Zillow's right. So we have a problem, right? I don't know a buyer that is not at all interested in value. I mean, they want the return and to know that they're not buying an asset that's upside down 40%. So I'm going to keep looking. I think that buyer's out there that just doesn't care and says, I'm only interested in the return. I don't even care what the property's worth. I just haven't met anybody that isn't also interested in the value. They're more interested in the return, but they're going to look at the value as well. So. So we're trying to figure out if these are even worth pursuing. And here's what I'll tell you. If they are, we're not going to pay what they're asking for them. Not a chance. Those numbers don't work. on the ones we were looking at today. So,
yeah, and I actually have the same, that scenario, exact scenario. So my sales guy, within the last 45 minutes, has sent me over 4 people that need offers.
I love it.
And I ran actually 3 of them before I got on the phone, before I got on this call, and it's,
okay,
it's exactly that. They're buy and holds. They're certainly too low-priced ARVs to fix and flip, and
yep,
the ARVs are around 40, and a 12 cap's around 50. They're actually one of them 750 a month gross rent. The other one, 2 of them are 750 a month gross rent.
Okay.
And the other one is a 900 gross month gross rent. It's got a little higher ARV, but it's the same situation. The ARV's lower than that cap rate.
Right.
So my offer's going to end up being, so I'd figured at a 12 cap investor all in about 50. That means that my offer would have to be 30. And
yeah, and here's the thing. You're looking at the right stuff. What, you know, can I even sell this thing? Here's the deal on that too, and just to throw this on the table, if I'm trying to sell a deal at 50 and Zillow says it's worth 45, but it's a 12% return or a 13 cap, somebody may take that. Say, hey, this thing's going to be, you know, according to Zillow, which I don't know, you know, and you can kind of, yeah, blow it off. This is our sales thing, right? Zillow isn't 100% accurate, but if you look on Zillow, going to say this thing's worth 45 and I'm selling it for 50. So I just want to put that out there. You know, do you anticipate that being an issue?
Yeah.
And just ask. You don't know until you ask. If it's if that difference is 20, right? You're trying to sell it at 50 and Zillow and comp say it's worth 30. That's a pretty big hurdle to overcome. $5,000 for a strong cap rate. Maybe not a big deal. Just so that's why we get to know buyers, have a conversation with them, you know, all that good stuff, so we know what we're working with. And then I think you did the right thing. Here's the thing. When you run across that and you have a strong rent-to-ARV ratio, which means, right, you're going to – I mean, these houses I was looking at today, some of them are renting for 8.25, 8.50, and the value's down at 30 grand. So, you know right up front, hey, we're going to have this problem on here, but – that actually gives you some leverage to go back to the seller and say, listen, I looked this thing up. Zillow says it's worth 30. I looked up some comps. I agree. You know, Zillow's not always right, but in this case, I think they are. So, you know, here's the thing. I'm not going to pay you, right? I can't pay, right? You're an investor, Mike. You wouldn't go pay $28,000 for a house that's worth 30 that needs 15 grand. I mean, those numbers just don't make sense. So before we go any farther, right, I don't want to waste your time. Certainly don't want to waste my own. You know, are you willing to entertain a lower offer? Let's just get it on the table. Those numbers don't work, and you're an investor. You get that.
Yeah.
And right, so you can use that. It's not that the deal's dead, but you can use that as some leverage to see if you can get that price down. So,
yeah.
But that was right. What you did. Look at the whole picture. You got to know if. Rents are more important, not a rental, but you still got to know what value is just for that perception piece when you go to sell it.
Yeah. Selling the
store. So you have four deals today that need offers. That's awesome. Were they all generated today?
Yeah, all today.
That's awesome.
So I'll sit with my sales guy. I'll get with him in the morning and have him make all the offers, make all the verbals with the people tomorrow. It's getting late there. It's 6:30 at night in Virginia.
Right.
So,
right.
I'll follow up with him.
Right. Make sure it's all about the fix up. That's typically the biggest pain.
Yeah.
Biggest pain people are going to have is, you know, here's what we estimate the fix up and repairs are going to be, and you lean on that estimator. Right? Say we have data on literally thousands of transactions. If they're going to question it, because that's the data that went into that rehab estimator. So we think it's going to take $15,000 to $18,000 to fix this thing up, right? it's been, you know, you said it's been sitting vacant for 6 years or whatever. Don't just go throw a number on the table. Educate. Got to educate first a little bit on why your number is going to come in where it is. So we have no issue. Somebody says, whoa, whoa, whoa. And you say, wait a minute. I'm not just pulling this number out of thin air. Let me show you how I got to this. Property's worth about 30. It's going to take X amount to fix it up, right? When I buy it in that, I still haven't made a profit, right, Mike? I told you up front, I want to buy it at a fair price, but I also got to make a profit because this is how I put food on the table for my wife and kids, right? You get that. So become human, and we've actually just walked through the numbers with somebody. Just pull back the curtain and say, you know, we've got to make 20%, which that sounds like a big margin, but on a deal this size, that's only X amount. You know, we've got overhead and blah, 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 blah. So just have your salesperson, and you may want to make these and help them through that process, but we want to educate a little bit before we throw a number on the table, take away the sticker shock. So
on one of the deals that he got a hold of, the gentleman is an investor himself, has about 100 properties. This one's let's see this configuration. I think it's a 3-1, and it's got, he just booted a renter out.
Okay.
It's got new carpet. Sounds like he's done quite a bit of fix up on it, rental side. And, he's wanting an offer to dump it. I guess he's just tired of dealing with this one. He just wants to off it. So yep. His rents are $900 a month on it, which 70% was $630 times 12 was $7,560. I put $5,000 in for fix up, just trying to be cautious on my number, and then assignment fee and the rest of any other closing costs, I put $10,000. So I took $15,000 as a number off of a 12.5 cap rate, which was 60.
Yeah, so what was your monthly rents?
Monthly rents were 900.
Yep.
Net was
630. 12, 75, 60, yep. Divided by 0.125, 12.5 cap. So, yeah, 60,480.
Yeah, about 60,000. So yep. Then I backed out the 15, which put me down to MAO of 45.
So you backed it out. 15. I'm trying to keep all this straight. Well, so it was rent ready.
So I took. Yeah, he's saying rent ready. I looked at the pictures, and it probably could use a little bit of love. I didn't get any logistics on mechanicals, on roof, HVAC, none of the expensive costs. So that's kind of why I dumped another five in there for fix-ups.
You're
going to
want to assume something. If they just kicked out a tenant.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to need something. I would call it at least 5.
That's what I put in there.
I would say 10 was on the board, something like that. And then, depending on the pain point, here's the thing. If you can pay 45, I certainly wouldn't start there.
No.
Yeah, no. I'd start at 25 or 30. At 30 probably.
And this guy is an investor, so he's going to be probably a little more keen to the figures, but the ARV on this house is only around 40. So that comes right back into the conversation. Yeah,
right.
12 cap at 60, that's great, but I mean, after we're all
that's
in and all done, it's only worth 40.
That ball's in your court.
I mean,
here's the thing. Yeah. If you get that same deal and it's only worth 40, you go back to them and say, listen, you're an investor. This thing's worth 40. That's what Zillow's telling me. No, I don't put a whole lot of stock in Zillow, so I looked up some comps, found 3 of them that support that value. I know you just sent somebody out there. It's rent ready, but it's probably going to need 5, right, from what you're telling me. And that's what you're going to have to figure out.
Yeah.
Do a little bit of work there. Then here's the thing. If you go back to, let's say it is worth 40, but you take the same deal, 900 a month times 0.7 is 630 times your 12, 75, 60, could you sell it for 50,000 instead of 60 if you're buying it below 40, right? So divided by 50,000, now we're at a 15 cap. So the reason I bring that up is, hey, Zillow says it's worth 40. I'm going to try and sell it for 50. Why would somebody do that? Oh, 15% rate of return.
Yeah.
So just like if as the neighborhood quality goes down, cap rate needs to go up to entice somebody to buy. This sucker's a little upside down, but, man, you may get a taker on that. That's a strong – you say, hey, this thing's going to be upside down about 10 grand when you buy it. That's right. If you go online, that's what you're going to find. But check this out, 15% rate of returns.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
Makes sense.
Right? May have a taker on that. And you know, based on this conversation, here's what you got to be asking buyers when you're talking to them. Hey, from time to time, I'll find a property in a neighborhood where the rents are strong, but the values are down. And you can just tell the story. For instance, I was looking at a house, Mike, last week. Let me see if you'd be interested in something like this. This thing rents at $900 a month, right? Strong little rents on a little 3-1, whatever, about 1,000 square feet. The value, because there's just no retail activity in the area, it's all investors. You look the value up online, you're going to find that it's about 40 grand. Let me just ask you up front. Would you pay $50,000 for an asset worth 40 if it gave you a strong 15% return? See what they say.
Yeah.
You know, see what they say, because that's a great little return. I mean, that would be enticing. I mean, just think about it. You know, would you put your own money on the line? Hey, you know, you're upside down 20 grand in this thing, and the return's, you know, 11%. Hey, Mike, I've got one. Watch this. I'm gonna sell it for 50. I think value's at 40, but check this out. With these rents, this is a 15 cap, which is obviously a strong return. I realize it's upside down. That's why I'm moving it at a higher cap rate so that you can recover your funds and get back on the right side on this investment. You interested in that? And that seems like a reasonable investor would take a look at it. You know, if you're going to hold this thing, and you could even, I'm trying to figure out what that math would be, but you could even say, hey, I ran the break even on this. If you're going to hold this thing more than 48 months, this is a no-brainer. So, you know, do you buy rentals and hold them for a couple of years, or do you buy rentals for the long haul where you're going to hold this thing for the next decade? What's your MO here? So this is just where we're, you know, just know the deal. So we know how to tell this story. That's what this all boils down to, is we've got to present the story. And if we think there's a hurdle in there, we're not going to wait for the buyer to find it. We're going to say, hey, here's the potential hurdle, and here's how we're going to overcome it. That's a, right? That's just sales 101. So,
okay. Yeah,
cool.
That covers most of what I had really kind of ailing me there. So, yeah, we're good. I'll get these out tomorrow, and need to get some ink on some paper and on my desk if I need.
That's right.
So,
ink to paper, yeah. That's the key, right? And these are,
right.
I'm telling you, these are good. So if you're gonna tie up a couple deals, make sure you have decent size inspection periods in there. Still gonna want to get in. Go beat up the purchase price a little bit more if the house is completely trashed. And then you've got to be taking this story, right, to get ready to present this to the buyers. Hey, here's the story on this thing. Just overcome it up front. Build it right in. Get it on the table. So, and you're going to get to a point where somebody will say, yeah, I'll overpay a little bit for an asset for a 15% return. Because you can tell them, right? In the turnkey rental world, if it's not a little bit upside down like this, you're going to be paying 8 to 10%, 12 tops. So, right, because this is just the reality of this deal, you know, I'll sell it to you at a 15% return. So just get ready to tell that story. Let me know when you get a couple tied up, and let's make sure we're figuring out the right story to tell, right? Because that's what sells them.
And far as, like, in, you know, just looking down the road forward, even those other contracts or those offers I'd sent out. So sounds like about 30 days is a kind of a normal timeline to try to get all these pieces
put
in place, get it inspected, and get it to close?
Yep, that would be normal. Depending on who you're working with now, an investor may not give you – I mean, I want a 21-day inspection if I can get it. Another investor on the other side of the table may or may not give it to you. So, yeah, just disclose, right? This goes back to that intent. What's your intent with this thing? Are you going to move it out? You know, don't represent yourself as one thing, and then when your sole focus is another. That's what that intent capacity training video goes back to, and that's where investors get goofed up a little bit.
And I'm making sure my sales guy is fully disclosing any of that up front. You know, this is right now we're going to be assigning contract. And, you know, that's the intention. So, and 21-day inspection period is from, you know, the time of signed contract, obviously. That's when
from MEC, which is mutually executed contract.
So,
and here's how you ask. Hey, Mike, so I'm going to send over the paperwork. It's going to have this price on it. We're accustomed to a 21-day inspection period, right? And that's just how we do it. We'll probably have, you know, we typically have most of the inspection items knocked out within the first week. But that's what we're accustomed to do it. Do you have any issue with that?
Yeah.
That sounds reasonable. Okay. So just that we're accustomed to, that's a great line. Get that one in the repertoire. Because now you're not really asking them. You're just telling them this is what we're accustomed to. Is that going to be a problem? And it's just a good way to present it. And it's usually not. They may fight back. And so you'll have to know, you know, we're just not going to do anything less than 14. You know, we do a thorough inspection, and, you know, that's just how we operate. We want to make sure that our price is good, that we're not buying any surprises. You know, you're an investor, Mike. You can relate to that. You know, we want to check sewer line and blah, blah, blah. Tell them how thorough you're going to be. And then if you're not doing sewer, you know, side note, sewer, for one, if it's messed up, you want to know about it because it's expensive. Number two, if it's a little messed up, it's a great item to renegotiate a cheaper price with if you have any kind of sewer issues. And it may just need a cleaning. Hard to say, but we pay the $100 to scope out a sewer line. It's usually $100. It depends on who you can find in your market. But like here in Denver, there's 99 Rooter. They do a scope for $99. It's usually $100 to $150. So.
Okay, and that's something that you do after you get it under contract. It's basically every
post-contract. Yeah, during the inspection period.
And through that, you're just doing not a formal inspection. You're just sending
our field rep
into it.
Yeah, you want 30 to 40 pictures on this sucker. All the rooms, you know, all four sides, look around the property, anything that looks to be of concern or, you know, hole in the wall or any kind of beat up or water damage looking thing, or you want a lot of photos.
Okay.
Yep. And then I also ask them, what do you feel? What do you smell? The floor feels solid. Does it feel like a trampoline in the kitchen? You know, they've got to be your eyes. So at some point, right, if any of you end up, you know, doing a little bit of construction, you would have somebody, you know, maybe a subcontractor or somebody running that market, running the fix-up for you, go and do these. So you actually have construction eyes on the project. But it's not required. You don't have to have a GC out there. A field agent can do it, field rep. But just make sure they're not, you know, make sure they're not taking five pictures.
Yeah.
You want a thorough video or photo documentary of the house. So.
And most of your cash buyers are not requiring a formal inspection. You know, they'll just send their construction guys over. They probably know the area well enough, and they're going to look around and go, yeah, these are typical things we look for. Or everything looks good or no.
Yeah. You'll find both.
Yeah.
Some will pay we'll pay a home inspector, but most of the time, especially if you're selling to investor buyers, they know what they're looking for, right? They'll either go do it themselves or they'll send a construction person. Because they've just been through, you know, 100 vacant houses or distressed houses. So just depends. Yep.
All right. Well, I'm good. Better let somebody else get in there.
Cool.
Get some more questions.
I love it. Get those four. An acquisitions person tying up, finding four offers to be made in a day. That's awesome. Where I want you guys to get is where you jump on this call and say, hey, acquisitions person found four and we got them out the door. And now you're on this call. So that's the dance you got to figure out. Get efficient, get fast, run the numbers, get those offers presented. The shortest, you can do it with a delay in there, but it's most effective to get that offer out as soon as possible. Same phone call if possible. If that's not, get it back to them as soon as you can.
Yeah, it keeps it fresh in their mind. They've exercised that part of their enthusiasm, so you got to tap into it while it's hot.
Right, and you were just going over, ooh, so the roof hasn't been updated in about 25 years, huh? Yeah, that's going to, those are the big items, roof, foundation, windows. So that's one of the bigger items. And you've got all this explanation and education going on, then you drop that offer. If you wait 24 hours, 48 hours, you can still be okay. I'm not saying it doesn't work. But they may have lost some of that, you know, just life happens. They may not be in the same frame of mind, and your offer comes in the next day, you know, 20 grand. What? I thought I was going to be a 40 when you were educating them on the phone call yesterday. So if there is a delay, go back through, educate them a little bit. Here's what we found. It, you know, you'll recall from our conversation yesterday, the roof was shot, blah, 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 blah. A house in this condition, in this location, we're accustomed to paying $12,500. All cash. We can close inside of 30 days, probably quicker. Does that number work for you? So, again, you can still throw in that we're accustomed. And you can blame it. You can just blame it on the property and the location. Property in this condition, in this location, we're accustomed to paying X. And here's a really powerful one in the script. And this one, when you feel like you get to know them a little bit, this one's tough to do after the fact. But if you're doing it on the first phone call, because you're getting to know that person a little bit, and you can just say, listen, if somebody came to you off the street and said, I'll give you an all-cash offer, you know, close quick, pay all the closing costs, yada, 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 what would you tell them you'd accept? And you're doing this third-party role. And then, you know, the idea there is for them to give you an answer. And then you follow up with, and Mike, then what would you sell the property to me for? And then just shut up. Because we're friends now, right? If some random investor fired you an offer, all cash, bam, 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 what do you think you'd take? I'd probably take 35 grand. 35, okay. So, Mike, what would you sell the property to me for? Ooh, and then you're throwing that tension on the line. That's why you got to have a salesperson doing this, because they like it. And if you're not wired for sales, that just makes you terribly uncomfortable. And I'm just telling you what to say, and it gets uncomfortable, right? You can feel the tension that it throws in, because we're pals now. I've gotten to know you. You told me about your vacation and why you bought the house and your family and blah, 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 blah. We're buddies now. So what would you sell me the property for? That's a great little way to present it. But that one most often has to be done first call when you're buddy-buddy and you're connected.
All right. Sounds good.
Great stuff. That's a great day to have four deals line up. That's killer. The next step, like I said, is, hey, we had four lined up and we made four today, same day. So that's okay, though. You're going to knock them out, get them analyzed, knock them out tomorrow, get those offers on the table. It's good stuff. Anything else, Mike?
No, we're good.
Okay, who else?
Hey, what's up, Mike? This is Ryan.
Ryan, what's happening?
Nothing much, man. Nothing much. Just working. So I'll start. I got two properties right now under contract. I just got those under contract yesterday.
What do the numbers look like? I love it.
All right. So this first one is it's set up as a 2-bed, 1-bath, but it actually has a third room that has egress window, has everything it needs to be a bedroom. That's the only thing it doesn't have is a designated closet, but it has enough space in the room where it can easily be built. And it actually has a laundry room off of that room that's pretty big. That if they wanted to use some of that space for closet space, they could easily do that and build it into there also.
Okay. What'd you say? It's a 2-1 or a 3-1?
It's set up as a 2-1, but that room would definitely be used as a bedroom. I don't see it being used.
Well, I was going to say, it sounds like you have another bedroom there, and if you have laundry, you have plumbing of some kind, you can probably get a half bath in there pretty easy, I would guess.
Yeah, it has enough room for it, honestly. It does.
Okay.
It has enough room.
Cool.
Yeah, so I'm definitely mark it as a 3.
Okay. What do you have it under contract for?
I got it under contract for $25,000.
Okay.
And at three bedrooms.
Yep.
3 bedrooms, it'll rent for $750.
How much work do you think it needs?
Man, this thing probably needs, I'm saying 5, but it maybe needs like $3,500. Needs some carpet, some paint. Yeah, this is in really good shape. New roof, new siding, new windows, detached garage. Has a sunroom on it.
What
has hardwood. Zillow has it at about 50, but I think it'll actually sell for about 60. From the comps I've seen, it'll sell probably for really, if you put it on the open market, probably about 60.
Okay. So 750 times 70%. And what is this neighborhood? B neighborhood, C neighborhood?
It's about a B. It's a really good neighborhood. It actually has some bigger houses around the corner, like probably like a half a mile away that's in the hundreds.
As neighborhood obviously goes up, you should be able to get away with a little bit lower cap rate. So let's run 750 times 0.7 is 525 times 12 is 6,300 divided by 0.1, a 10 cap. $63,000, which is right in line with where you're thinking.
Yep. Yeah.
Cool. So you have it at 25. What are you going to try and sell it for? And then it needs max 5.
So I was putting it out there at like 32.5.
Okay. So now let's run this math because this is going to get better. So 32,500 if I buy it, and you're telling me worst case scenario it needs 5, probably less. So 32.5 plus $5,000 is obviously 37.5. So let's call it $1,500 in closing costs, right? Let's call it $39,000. So here we go, $750 a month times 0.7 is 5.25. I just don't remember what the number was, times 12, $6,300.
Uh-huh.
And what did I just say, 37,000?
39.
Divided by 39,000, 16.2.
Yep, that's what I got it at.
Who on here is buying 16 cap? Deals that need very little. I mean, that's clean.
Yeah, that's a home run deal. Yeah, that's definitely a great deal. I already sent out my text blast this morning, and I got guys on my line already for it. So
in a B neighborhood.
Yeah, it's a really good neighborhood.
A 16 cap in a B neighborhood. That's all they want.
Really good neighborhood.
When do you think you'll have an end buyer with earnest money?
My goal is, I'm trying to do it. I'm trying to do it. Like, I want this to be, like, really quick. So I'm aiming for something quick. I'm going to hit it hard. I'm going to get it out to, you know, everybody I can. I'm going to take the guys that I know, but at the same time, I'm reaching out to. I get a solid offer in with paperwork and earnest money deposit there, and I'm going to keep putting it out there, keep calling buyers.
Where did this deal come from? Is it a vacant, or was this in your home market? You're running some other marketing.
This one was for sure in my home market, but I'm trying to think, where did I get this one from? Yeah, I think this came from a campaign. These are people I had just been happening to be following up with and
killer
got
deal.
Them that way. So, yeah, it's definitely a great Yeah, that's a great deal. So
And here's the thing about this. Look at what you're selling. You're selling a 16-cap deal in a B neighborhood. You can be all in at 39. And what does Zillow say? It's worth 50? So, and you have 11 grand equity. I mean, the story on this thing, right? Killer return for a B neighborhood. I mean, a B neighborhood ought to be more like a 10 to 12 cap. Ryan, I'm selling you this one at 16. Plus, you can be all in with closing costs for about 39. You go online, you're going to see it's about, you know, the value's around 50. Bam, bam, bam. And you just say, hey, man, I'm not going to take highest and best. This is going to be first come, first serve. So I know this is up your alley. When, you know, can you get title or earnest money to title here in the next hour, next 90 minutes?
Exactly. And that's the approach I'm taking with it. Yeah, I know it's a great deal. I'm not taking, you know, I've already had a guy that tried to come in low. So I'm like, no.
Yep, not a chance. You could ask for highest and best on this one, but build that into your story. Say, hey, you know, Ryan, you know these are strong numbers, but I'm not even going to call highest and best on this one. I'm just going to move it at this price, first come, first serve.
Yep.
Are you buying 16-cap deals that need very little work in B neighborhoods? Yes or yes?
Yep.
Yes, that's fantastic. $1,500 earnest money. Here's the title company. Can you get it there in the next 90 minutes? I mean, close that sucker.
Exactly. Yep. That's definitely my approach with it. Yep.
All
that's definitely my approach.
Hey, all right. Okay. What's the next one?
All right. The next one, let me pull it up. This is a three bed, one bath, has a one car attached garage. And it has a carport on it, full basement, 1,306 square feet.
Including the basement, so it's 750 up and down, or 650 up and down?
No, it's 1,300 up and down.
13 above grade with a full basement.
Yeah.
Holy smokes, okay. So this is a big structure with a finished basement.
Yeah.
2,600 square feet.
Well, the basement is not finished. It's actually just a dry basement. It is not finished. The basement is not finished.
What's the ceiling height?
It's enough. It's probably about 8 feet, I would say. So it's definitely high enough to be
okay.
To
so you're building in your story here. You need two different rental amounts, and maybe you have them. But if you just leave it and let the basement be unfinished storage, here's what I think you can rent it for. If you want to go ahead and finish the basement, because you can do that in the rehab estimator in FreedomSoft, you can put in 2,600 square feet and tell both stories. Because you get another two bedrooms and a bathroom down there, cut a few egress windows.
Mm-hmm.
This thing just became a beast of a rental. So anyway, so okay.
All right. So
where were you?
It rents
above grade. Yep.
Yeah, 1,300 above grade. It rents. It'll rent for about 900.
Okay.
I have it under contract for 25.
Okay.
I'm
what condition
thinking
is the upstairs in?
The upstairs is actually clean, but it needs work. So they already started the rehab. So it has, you know, in the bathroom, it has a new vanity, new toilet, new tubs around, new flooring.
The kitchen
has newer cabinets. It'll probably need some countertops. It has new backsplash and new flooring. It'll probably just need light fixtures and stuff like that throughout. I know the basement, one of the basement foundation walls, the block walls, it needs some work, so it'll need some repair down there. I'm thinking
what
about
you,
trying to get a
Are you talking structural work?
It looked like it's a block wall, and it looked like some of the blocks from the top just came down. It looked like it just needs some work on it. So I was going to try to get a guy in this week to kind of give me some type of estimate on it.
Put some expert eyes on that, because structural, as you know, can be a couple grand or it can be 40 grand.
Exactly,
so
It
sounds like it's maybe just some crumbling cinder block, but get to the bottom of that one, I would say, because that could be a big deal. You could get stuck with one if you got issues like that. So okay,
So, who do you think? I mean, what's a good guy to reach out for that? What type of person should I reach out for? Just the like.
Well, ideally, talking structure and engineers.
Okay.
So, an experienced GC maybe, but an experienced GC cannot give you a letter. Worst case scenario, if somebody comes in and says, "No, man, we got a problem with this wall," and you say, "Oh, no, I had that looked at," or you just get it on the table and say, "Hey, when you go in the basement, you're going to see a couple cinder blocks came down. I already paid an engineer for it. Got the letter. What's your email? Send it over." He said it's no big deal.
Okay.
So,
I'm going to try to find the contact tomorrow.
Yeah, here's what you can do. Go to GCs will know good ones. Architects always know engineers because they draw a house, right? They make it look cool, and then the engineer tells them how to make it stand up. So they know engineers, but go to your other investors that do fix and flip in town and say, hey, I need an engineer's opinion on a basement wall. I don't think it's a big deal, but I just want to be sure. Who do you know that I can call real quick and send them over?
Okay.
And you're probably going to pay, you're going to pay for their trip. And typically, if it's not a big deal, I've paid $75 for a letter like that in the past.
Okay.
So, but worth its weight in gold because, especially an untrained eye, they'll panic if they see something like that coming down, and you just say, that's part of your story. Well, that would be for somebody that's going to go see the place that's really interested, and you're just going to say, hey, when you go in the basement, the south wall, here's what you're going to see. It's not a big deal. All right, I had an engineer look at it. I've got a letter. They said replace a couple cinder blocks, and this thing's good to go. The flip side is, it is an issue, and you either renegotiate or back out of the deal, and you're not on the hook for this thing.
Right. Yep.
I got
20 business days. I got 20 business days for the inspection, so I'll try to. I'm gonna get it out the way. I'm gonna get it out the way ASAP. I'm gonna get that done this week.
So this one, you have it at 25. What are you thinking it needs? 12?
Yeah. Yeah, something around there. It depends. It depends on the exit strategy, really.
Yeah.
It depends on what someone really wants to get in there and do. Because it has I'm seeing an ARV around 80, 85. So this can be a good rental or a pretty decent flip also.
Okay, so you've got two stories. Did you run it through the rehab estimator and Freedom Saw?
Yeah, I did.
What did it say, fix and flip versus buy and hold?
So, fix and flip, I had at 21,850, and then for rental grade, I had it about, it's saying at about 6,200. And
okay.
I think that's when I had it, let me see, I think I had that at Livable.
I was being conservative at 12. I mean, obviously, kitchens and bathrooms are the most expensive, and it sounds like they've got flooring, backsplash, cabinets, you need countertops.
Yeah.
So,
They're
most of the way done.
Yeah, and it needs it will need a roof. That's one of the big things. It will need a roof, and it'll need a furnace.
Okay.
It'll need AC system.
Okay. Yeah, so probably $45-ish, maybe the same for a roof. This is a pretty good size, 1,300 square foot ranch. So it's got that's the footprint. So what, $6,500 roof? What do you have it at?
Yeah.
Estimated at 7.
Yeah, that's what I was. Yeah, I had it about 7.
Okay. So, yeah, you've got to go into that rehab estimator because that's right, assuming you don't need a new roof. So you've got to take that number and then say, nope, roof needs to be replaced and adjust that number accordingly. But so you're 12 to 15, and then I like it at, upgrade everything just a little bit in the kitchens and bathroom. I mean, drywall's drywall, paint's paint, carpet's carpet in this neighborhood. You're not going to put high-end carpet in an $85,000 house.
No.
12 to 20. So okay, so let's run the math. 25. What are you gonna sell it for?
Right now, I was putting it out there. I'm thinking about putting it out there at like 35. I'm wanting to make 10 on it.
Okay.
35.
So let's do a buy and hold
37.
First. So 35. Let's say it needs 12. So we're at 47. And let's call it 48,000 with some closing costs. So rent's at 900 times 70%, 630 times 12, 7560 divided by 48 grand, 15.75 cap rate at those numbers.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
Strong, strong like bull. That's what that is.
Absolutely.
Man, you are moving some rentals. I mean, these here's what I'd like to see you do, and we probably had this conversation before. Meet a GC and a private lender, and didn't you tell me that you had somebody that mentioned some private money?
Yep, I actually had one of my...
You pull these down with private money, wholesale it to yourself, still get paid up front, pay the GC to get it rent ready, put a tenant in there, and then sell this sucker turnkey at 10 or 11 cap.
Yep.
That's another option.
Yeah,
on the
that's
table,
killer.
For sure.
Yeah.
So I don't have any issue with any of you turning a payday, but I'm telling you, in your back pocket, you need to say, okay, I got to find some private money and I got to find a GC that I can trust.
Yeah, and I've been working on that in the background, getting that,
yep,
getting the private money stuff together, and then also
yep,
trying to, you know, get in contact and make contact with some good GCs, because that has been in the back of my mind, because I've been getting some really good deals here.
Yeah, you're buying these deep. Really
yeah,
deep, which is killer. Love it.
Yep.
So what are the closing dates on both these? Are they 30 days out?
Yep, I got the first one. That one is scheduled to close March 12th, and then this
okay,
one that we just discussed is scheduled to close March 19th.
Love it. Are the sellers
and I was gonna ask you. Yeah,
yeah,
they're willing to sell. I actually set them up that way. I told them, okay, I'm gonna put you on 30 days, but my plan is to close sooner. So I'll be in contact with you, you know, if we need to, you know, move it up. So I'm definitely
I'm definitely
looking to close them ASAP.
Did you get these off the title today, or are you sending them tomorrow?
Sent them today.
Okay, beautiful. Yeah, obviously the next step is you want to make sure title's clear, or they change the whole thing. So hopefully they come back and they're good to go.
Yeah.
Good stuff, man.
Yep.
Yeah, so
and I was
about to
ask you, Mike, what should
yeah,
be my approach? I mean, I got two at one time, and you know, around the same areas, around the same markets. I mean, would you just start putting out both of them at the same time, or what should be my
approach? Absolutely. Yeah. See if you can. And here's the thing: since you don't know what title looks like yet, these deals are so good. I wouldn't be surprised if you have earnest money before title is back. So to cover your buyer, say, listen, earnest money is not going to go hard until we get title back, and know that these things are free and clear like the sellers told me. Got it?
Right.
So
yep,
do them that courtesy, because you don't know yet that there isn't a, you know, $40,000 IRS lien on either of these.
Right, yeah.
Because I'm guessing, like I said, I would be surprised if you don't have buyers here in the next 48 hours and you're not going to have title back that quick.
Right.
So yeah, I would be telling every buyer, hey, I've got two of them. Are you looking for two? I mean, these are a 15 and a 15.7 cap rate.
Yeah, it's no brainers for sure.
I mean,
with
equity on both. And the second one that you just described, there's more equity than the first.
Yeah, it's a ton of equity on that one.
So, man, I'm telling you, with private money, that second one, you're pulling that thing down.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the numbers on that. You've got it at 25, wholesale it to yourself for 35, put 15 to 20 into it, right?
Yep.
You're up around, and you'd have to be a little careful. This could, if you had good terms on private money, this one gets a little bit tight as I'm running the math here in my head. But you could wholesale it to yourself five, make five up front, and push the rest off to the end. Something like this, if you had good terms on private money, you could try and for sale by owner it, put it online. You could hire one of those companies that you pay like $1,500 to. They put it in the MLS, you know, like a limited service real estate company instead of paying the full, you know, the full 6% when you go to sell it. But that's where, you know, this is why, and this goes right back to the orientation call. You want to control the lead, because then you get to pick what happens to it. If you decide to wholesale both of these, fantastic. But I'm telling you, right, I saw this firsthand. I started back in May of 08, I'm running acquisitions for Rob, and we'd have multiple deals on the table. They're all good deals, but two of them were killer. The buyer's list never saw those two.
Yeah.
We're doing these in-house. These are ours. And the reason that, I mean, he's always been able to do that because he's the one generating the leads.
Right.
If you don't know how to generate leads and you're buying from other wholesalers in town, you're not seeing the best stuff. Count on it. It's never going to market. Never going to the buyer's list. Those best deals that they see. You know, Brad and Rob, they have in Memphis. If they run the numbers and as a fix and flip, it'll make 40 grand profit. Buyer's list never sees it. They take it down. They fix it up. They list it, sell it, make the 40 grand. It's never going to the list. So, and you sit in that driver's seat, which is, you know, this is that conversation, right, about, hey, you're a wholesaler, first and foremost, fantastic, but got a little private money here in my back pocket, got a contractor if I need to call on them, and hey, this is a home run. I'm taking this one down myself. Mr. and Mrs. Private Lender, ready to rock and roll, you know? Get the contractor on the phone, get some numbers on this thing, and take them down. So keep doing what you're doing. Again, you can't lose, right, on these if you just wholesale them, but you've got to start thinking, and it sounds like you already are, GC and private money.
My mind is definitely going there, so.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so. Yep, so
love it.
That's pretty much it.
Okay.
I'm just steady working on my working everything else, working different leads. I'm just trying to set up the foundation, get a solid phone salesperson. I got a couple of people that I got to talk to about that. So that's a steady work in progress. But I'm good. I mean, I'm feeling really good about everything. Thursday will be my last call. But I'm feeling really good about everything. I feel like I got a solid foundation. I know where I'm going. I know how it looks. So I'm feeling really good about it. So
beautiful. Well, good stuff, man. Great update. Keep me in the loop when you get contracts on these before Thursday. Send me an email real quick to the coaching. Let me know.
Okay, we'll do.
Let me know how these things unfold because I get excited for you guys. This is fun. Fun to talk about.
Yep.
So, good stuff.
I'll keep it. Yep.
Cool. Who else? We covered a lot of different topics today. So even if it's not an update, but if you have a question on something we've gone over, a strategy or a script or whatever the case.
Hey, Mike. It's Dave here.
Hey, Dave.
How's it going, man?
Good. How are you?
Great.
Good
stuff today. I was just thinking through and getting ready to launch a new remote market and wanted to kind of, you know, talk a little bit more about the field agent, you know, as opposed to the sales guy, because I'm going to be calling these myself just to get it going while I get a sales guy in place. But getting a field agent out there to get the pictures that you're talking to Mike about, I mean, and then kind of thinking about Mike's next steps when he gets at least three of those four under contract and dialed in, the next steps there and the guy that's going to do it for him type of setup in the whole system.
So if you have a competent bird dog, send them and say,
okay,
hey, I've got another task for you, right? If you've got to have somebody that, you know, you feel like is decent on the phone, you know, maybe look them up on Facebook or, you know, figure it out. Are you going to send them into somebody's house, right? Because they're going to go represent you in this vacant house. But, yeah, if you've got a bird dog, we typically, if it's inside of 10 to 12 miles from where they live, $25 to go do it. If it's farther than that, usually pay them $35 because obviously they've got to drive there and back. But, yeah, send them out and just tell them, any pictures of every room? Take photos of the whole thing. You want 30 plus, about 30 pictures, 30 to 40. Exterior, you know, walk around kind of slow. If anything looks like a problem on the roof, zoom in on it for me, get a picture of it. If anything on the house looks crooked, get a picture. If anything looks like water damage, take a good photo. But
you know, get each room. You know, you can look at the neighborhood on Google Maps, so that's not quite as important. But, you know, anything that looks funky. And you're going to have to describe, if they don't know anything about real estate, you're going to have to describe, you know, ask them if they're a homeowner themselves, if anything looks cracked. You know, I want a good zoomed in picture on all that stuff so they can be your eyes for you. And then again, you know, they've got to take mental note. Does the house feel solid? Or, you know, when they walk in a kitchen or bathroom, are they bouncing on the floor? Because that's obviously water or something's going on underneath, right? What does it smell like? You know, does it smell like cat urine? Because that's either cats that didn't go outside or meth, right? So right. Just what are you feeling? What are you smelling? What are you seeing? And then I had a bird dog in St. Louis, and I was like, hey, man, you don't happen to have any construction background, do you? He's like, oh, I did construction for years. Oh, fantastic. I did, you know, that was just luck of the draw.
Right. But,
yep.
Okay.
Pay him a trip charge and have him be your eyes and ears. That's it. I start with bird dogs because you already know them, and they're already driving around taking photos anyway, so it's a no-brainer.
Right.
Yep.
Perfect. Great. Right on,
no-brainer.
Yeah.
No-brainer.
I think that's it for now. And just want to make sure you just get my email over the weekend. I actually had to send it on Saturday morning, I think.
Yeah, I remember looking at it, and I didn't go back into it. But I will, I'll make a note to do that tomorrow if
awesome.
I don't take a peek at it tonight. Yep. And I
That'd
basically,
be great.
I'll probably just reinforce what you found. I mean, if you follow the training, you got it. If you have some questions in there, you know, I'm happy to address them, but...
Okay.
You've been around for a little bit, so I'm assuming your research found a good spot. But, yeah, I'll double-check it for sure. And I must
Perfect.
Have – sometimes in that email, both Rob and I access it. So if he looks at one and I glance at it quick and I say, ah, there are no unread emails, I may have just missed it. So it usually doesn't take me this
sure.
long to get back to it. So I'll take a peek at it for you.
All right, great.
Yep. Yeah, good stuff. What else? Or who else? Everybody good on, you know, we delve deeper on some of the stuff here tonight. You know, a couple of different scripts or how to evaluate a deal. You know, why ARV and rents matter, even though on a rental, rents matter more. I want to make sure everybody's clear on that, right? You can't get all of this stuff into a training. It's too much. And so, you know, I was going to say before Dave chimed in there, nice job being on the call because this is, you know, you got to show up. To get this extra stuff, you know, and then Ryan brings two deals to the table and we look at them live time. You know, that's the stuff that just, you know, in the trenches, that's the whole reason this call exists is for that kind of stuff. And, you know, nice job, Ryan, by the way, throwing up. I know everybody on here listening is saying, man, if I could find two deals like that, those are great deals. No doubt about it. Those are strong numbers. So, that's good stuff. Anything else?
Mike, I do have a comment
I'd
like to make about kind of working through the situation with the VAs might be helpful for somebody else. So the first VA I had that did a pretty decent job the first round and struggled and got me a bunch of bad data, and it was that area in Hampton that didn't have good public access records and whatnot. So
yep.
I basically was telling him I'm done, I'm moving on. He come back begging to me, please don't, you know, please don't drop me. I love working with you. I want to keep working with you. So what I had done was, you know, I kind of laid it out. I said, all right. So I come up with a plan on how to deal with him. And
yep.
What I did was to keep him accountable, to make sure that the data I was getting from him was good.
Yep.
I set up groups of 25 leads, set up like five of them. So that's 125 leads. I said, you go in. I made an agreement with him. You go in, you do the 25. I'm going to have my sales guy call those. I agreed. I'm going to pay you 80 cents a lead to skip trace these. First time through, you can do a quick skip trace if you want. And if we get a hold of people, great. I says, but what I want you to do, this, if we've got however many, I don't care if it's one or if it's 10, I'm going to have you re-skip trace those leads on your dime, and I want at least 2 to 3 other contacts to get a hold of.
Yep, if they don't have good knowledge the first time. So do it right the first time.
Exactly. So,
yep.
And
he was
okay with that. And, yep. You know, so I'll, he just started kind of cranking through that one. So seemed
yep.
like
Beautiful.
The numbers he was giving me today were better. And I'm going to just keep him on that regiment for now. So I'm putting
Perfect.
In milestones.
Here's the thing. Here's
yeah.
the thing, too. If you have 10 that need to be re-skip traced, hold off your next pay to him until
yeah.
those 10 are done. And I'm assuming that you're going to do that anyway, but
yeah, yeah,
that's great. Because last week when you gave the update, you had left it at, I'm not going to work with this guy anymore. And then he came back to you. I'm guessing that you have a good VA for a while would be my thought. Because he
yeah.
came back to you, like you said, begging, no, 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 please, you know, let's continue our relationship. So yeah, well played. This is, you know, this goes back to our conversation on here that's very consistent about personnel being your biggest challenge. I mean, you got to know the how-tos, got to know the script, got to know how to analyze a deal. But over time, personnel will be the biggest challenge. So, and then, you find a creative way to take it around it. So that's good stuff.
So I'm putting a milestone of $20 in for those 25 leads, and then I feel like he's taking care of that, then I'll pay him for that milestone and move on.
Yep, perfect. Yeah, good stuff. I like that he came back because he realized, wait a minute, I had a good thing here. I screwed it up. Let me repair this. So, sometimes those are the best relationships you'll have. Somebody that tried to take advantage, got called on it, realized, oh, crap, I shouldn't have done that, and then, apologize and move on. It could happen again, but I'd be surprised. So,
yeah.
Good stuff.
That's it.
Anybody else? Try and keep these to 90 minutes here. We've got a few left. I also don't want to miss any questions, though, so.
Good evening. Mike, this is Dennis. I'm just
hey,
checking
Dennis.
In.
Yeah, good to hear from you.
I was listening to everything. I'm going to re-listen to this part, this one again. When the recordings come back up, there's a lot of good information in here I want to
go over again.
I was
a little bit behind, and then I got caught up on Friday last week. So I'll try and get this one up tomorrow.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, that's the thing. If you want to rehear, some of the conversation or if you're not exactly clear on some of that stuff, obviously go back through and re-listen. Hearing something once, I think if you're super sharp taking notes, you get about 10% of it is what I've heard through studies. So, go back a second and third time and you'll pick up most of the ideas we were talking about today. So, yeah, I'll try and get it up on there tomorrow.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else quick as we wrap up today?
Yo, Mike, this is Lee, man.
Hey, Lee.
What's up?
How are you?
Didn't want too much. I'm doing all right. Just let you know that deal, I actually got it sold. Me and the buyer went to the title company on Friday.
Nice.
Down
what are the numbers?
I got it for 30. I got it for 28.
Okay.
Sold it at 33, so it'll be a $5,000 assignment fee.
Yep, assigned it. This is a rental, right?
Yeah, it was 2-1. It was small, but a little bit under 700.
Is this that one you sent me?
Yeah. Yeah, the one I sent you,
okay.
So I actually got a buyer for it.
That's a testament to how competitive Dallas is right now. That's awesome.
But
so you
guy
got
actually, go ahead, Mike.
What's that? Oh, I was going to say $5,000 assignment fee. Buyer bought it for 33. How much work did it need, did you think?
15.
Okay, so 48, call it 49, round up to 50 if we want. And then what does it rent for?
About 800.
You tell me 850, 800?
Yeah, so I think he's going to convert it to a 3-1 And
okay.
He's going to rent it for $850, or he's going to hold on to what he said he hasn't decided.
So $850 times 70%, $595 times 12, $7140 divided by $50,000, 14.3 cap deal. Bam. And Dallas is competitive. Woo.
Competitive.
I'm telling you, Lee sent me this thing, and I was like, I mean, this is a little beater, no doubt about it. And I remember you shot me that email back that said, you know, the day of 750 rents in Dallas are over. Rents are up.
Some days are over with. And the thing about that property was, I think the guy actually, whoever had it first must have went in and did a rehab to it, because the inside looked great, walls and everything.
Gotcha. So it, okay.
The thing
so
was
it,
somebody just came
it probably
in
doesn't
just,
need. It probably just needs a little love on the outside.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that's
so their return's even better than that if they can save money, obviously. That's cool.
Danny was asking
good stuff,
for more,
man. When
more properties. You know what I'm saying? That's,
when does it close?
Title work should be back in probably by 5 days. He's ready to go in and do his thing. So I'm saying title work come back within the next 5 days, hopefully, you know, 2 weeks, 2.5.
Cool. Yeah, so email over anything else you find.
Hey, I actually got to sit down Wednesday with this guy. Taxes behind. He got behind $15,000 on his taxes. He called me up today and was like, hey, man, I want to go ahead and sit, sell. I got time Wednesday. We can sit down and talk about it. And this property here is in like a B neighborhood, house worth about $140,000.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna try to get it real cheap from him. Pay the $15,000 in taxes, probably offer him another $30,000 or $40,000.
Love it. Yeah, let me know.
Posted on that one. All right.
Let me know when you have it. Good
I'm
stuff. Doing. Good stuff. When's the closing date on that first one where you're making the five? Or no, you said 2 weeks out. About 2 weeks out.
Yeah, 2.5 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
right.
I close
that's
tomorrow.
Right.
I close tomorrow. I should be picking up a check tomorrow. That's another $5,000, and I got another deal in title now. Title haven't came back yet, so I got $5,000 I'll be making on that one also.
Love it. A lot of stuff happening. That's good. Cash and check.
I'm not too excited, though. You know, I'm not too excited because I'm in Dallas, so to me, I'm like, okay, I've been doing that. Once I close my first couple deals in my other markets, then I'll be excited. So that's what I'm at.
You know what? Yeah, I get that. It's always fun cashing a check, but you know, it's going to be the same thing. Just you're right. Instead of you going to see the house or doing the sit down, you're going to do it by phone, and then you're going to send a bird dog to go do the inspection for you, and then you know, just leverage some other people. I'll tell you where it gets really exciting is when the lead just came in from somebody that was working, and then the acquisitions person got on the phone and tied up the deal, and then the dispositions person grabbed it, got it off the title, found the end buyer, and then told you, you know, hey, Lee, we've got a closing in 2 weeks, and here's what we're going to make, right? But it's always fun cashing checks between where we're at in that end goal, but that's, yeah, let's not downplay the closings either. But I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. So that's good stuff, though. When the deals are coming in. So where are you at with the remote market? What's in place?
To be honest, I need to put my team in place because I got two damn good bird dogs. And I mean they get after it.
Here's the other thing too is you keep for now, keep doing what you're doing in Dallas. Get the team leveraged the other place and you'll have closings in two markets, but you're still just doing what you're doing in Dallas. That's still leverage. Right?
Got you.
So you just got to carve out, right? This is the challenge. Everybody's busy, whether it's a job doing something other than real estate or it's a job doing real estate in your home market. We're all busy, but we've got to find that 15 to 60 minutes a day to get up to 10,000 feet, put our CEO hats on and say, okay, here's where I'm going. What pieces are missing? What do we need to get in place? So start working that into your daily schedule. It's got to happen on a daily basis. And if you don't do it now, what will happen is you'll stay busy in Dallas, then you'll start closing deals in another market. Everything's going to go through you. That's your system. Everything has to go through me or it doesn't get done. And that's a terrible system. And then you're going to wake up one day and say, what the heck did I build this for? So that's where this leads. If we don't intentionally get out of the business frequently to say, okay, I'm doing this now, but I'm going to find a person that's going to take on this role long-term or eventually, right, whatever that looks like. So, you know, we're never going to downplay closings and making money. So nice job getting them to the table, you know, getting deals, that kind of thing. At the same time, let's build a business, not a job. So,
gotcha, Mike.
Yep, on Thursday, you got to start working that in. I want to, you know, on Thursday, I'll take the updates on the deals, on the transactions. We'll absolutely talk about them, but I want an update from you on what happened in the last 3 days to move the business forward and to get the remote market moving. Let's get some of that in play, all right?
Okay, cool.
Beautiful. Anybody else? We're going to go 5 minutes over. That's what I want to do it for. Hear about a couple deals. That's good stuff. All right, everybody. Good call as always. A lot of stuff happening. So, yeah, let's make it a great couple days. Hear from you on Thursday. Obviously, any questions, get them into the coaching center. And then if you've got, you know, I know Mike's got some offers that are going out tomorrow. Ryan was talking about a couple deals that we're selling. You guys make progress on that kind of stuff. Shoot it into the coaching email. I want to hear about it, and especially if you have any questions on where you're at and what you're going through as you get in the middle of a few. So great stuff, everybody. Again, I'll try and get this call up tomorrow because I know Dennis asked. He said he wanted to go back and hear it again, so I'll assume that there are a few more that maybe want to revisit as well. So I'll try and get this one up quicker than usual. But, yeah, good stuff. We'll have a great afternoon, evening, morning. Wherever you're at, any questions, obviously get them into the coaching email, and we'll chat soon, okay?
All right.
Thanks, Mike.
All right.
Yep. Take care, buddy.
All right. Take care.